You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Amateur boxers from all over the state will be in Middleton this weekend for the second Golden Gloves tournament. Winners from weight classes advance to the national championships. Meanwhile, USA Boxing is preparing its Olympic team for the Summer Games in Tokyo. So what do you want to know about amateur boxing? What questions do you have about the training and what happens inside the ring? We're at 800-642-1234. Andrea Nelson is a former professional boxer who is now a coach and president of the Bob Lynch Boxing Foundation, which promotes amateur boxing in the Madison area. She's also president of Wisconsin Golden Gloves, part of the franchise promoting amateur boxing nationwide. Andrea, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, good morning. Glad to be on.
And we have Marcus Robert Johnson, a competitive amateur boxer who won the Wisconsin 2016 middleweight and last year's welterweight championship. Marcus, welcome to you.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, Andrea, let's start with you, the Golden Gloves Amateur Boxing Competition. Tell us about what this competition is. What is at stake here?
So this is Olympic-style amateur boxing. We are going to have novice divisions and a master's division, which is 41 and older. But the basic reason for this tournament is for 18 to 40-year-old open, meaning more experienced boxers, to get an opportunity to be on the Wisconsin team and represent Wisconsin at the Nationals. It will be in Tulsa, Oklahoma this year.
So how popular is amateur boxing in Wisconsin, Andrea? Because you've been there, you've seen it over the years.
It's one of those sports that, ebbs and flows, but I've been seeing kind of a resurgence. Last year we had about 70 boxers registered. This year we have over 100. There seems to be a growing interest, I think.
And these boxers come from all over the state. There are gyms all around the state that are training these amateur boxers?
Oh, there are, yep. Madison's got quite a few. Ford's Gym is the one that we train out of on Madison's east side. Milwaukee, Racine area has quite a few, but even the middle of the state, a lot of the rural areas have boxing too.
Marcus, how did you come to boxing? How did you get into the sport?
Well, I knew my father was a boxer growing up, and I always was just kind of attracted to all types of combat. And growing up in high school, I always liked fighting and didn't really know where to put my energy. And I kind of found the boxing gym through friends at high school here in Madison. And once that happened for me, it just really gave me a place to be. And boxing has really just opened up every opportunity I've had to meet people and travel.
So it really was an outlet for you when you were a young kid because you were getting into fights. But there is a difference between getting into fights and then becoming a boxer. What is that journey like?
It makes you realize what you really are. And I say that because, like, it's one thing to get in random little fights at school or something, or be walking down the street and think you're tough. But when you're in the boxing ring, you're really only left with yourself and the opponent and the referee who's in charge of keeping you safe. And once you're in that situation, it just, you have a little more respect, not just for yourself, but your surroundings, because you realize how much you can affect everything. You know, sometimes we live life like we're a main character in the movie, and I think boxing gives us an opportunity to really share the space with someone else.
Humbling, yeah. Talking with Andrea Nelson, a former professional boxer turned coach. Marcus Robert Johnson is here, an amateur boxer from Madison, who will be stepping into the ring this weekend for the Wisconsin Golden Gloves competition. What questions do you have about what it takes to become a boxer or enter the ring? Have you attended Golden Gloves competition matches before? What's it like to be a spectator? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Andrea, how is the scoring and reffing done in amateur boxing?
There are certified officials, judges, referees, timekeepers, and such. And there's a referee in officiating the bout. Their main objective is to make sure that the boxers are safe. So if there's somebody is overmatched or they look like they don't want to be in there, the referee is pretty quick to stop the match. It's I'd say it's a lot different than pro boxing, like what people see on TV. Amateur boxing is scored more on points and good technique, effective aggression, meaning not just rushing in and swinging wildly, but trying to be move in, use good defense to not get hit, and to cover.
What does good technique look like? You know, you coach. What are you looking for in that technique?
I'd say first and foremost would be balance and good footwork. So really having your feet under you, having a good foundation for your movement. You want to land the punches with the knuckle portion of the glove. So we're not looking for slaps and big haymakers, swings. Using the hip to throw the punch. And then being able to move your head out of the way so you're not getting hit.
A lot of reaction time coming into this, a lot of being really quick in your movements, I would suspect.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Boxing requires strong aerobic base of conditioning, but also anaerobic burst of punching, quickness, balance, and courage, I guess.
Some courage there. Marcus, let's talk about brain injuries for a moment. We see fighters who have slurred speech, that their concussions are a real issue. How much do you think about brain injuries as a boxer?
As a boxer, you know, it's definitely always going to be there. And I think the good thing about this time in history and where boxing is, we have a lot more science and a lot more knowledge about brain injuries, and we know not to just keep sending guys in there to get battered and bruised. A lot of the injuries we see, especially with guys like Muhammad Ali or Joe Frazier back in the day, these are giant men weighing more than like 220 pounds often. And they were a lot of these people back in the day were boxing for 10, sometimes 15, 20 years, taking damage that referees wouldn't stop, that doctors wouldn't stop. And keep in mind also that a lot of that was pro, where like the goal of amateur boxing is more, it's a lot of kids involved and it's all volunteers. So our goal is always to keep each other safe. And, you know, the risk and potential is always there. But the greatest thing I love about amateur boxing is, and this is, you know, it gets me frustrated when I'm in there, but I always thank the referees afterwards for keeping us safe, because like it really only takes one weird punch for them to stop it. Like amateur boxing has so many of my fights have been stopped as well on me. You know, I've not really stopped a lot of people, but I've got about 70 matches now. I've lost like probably about half of them. And I'd say that the biggest thing I learned through my experience is that if you're not punching back or if you're not moving your feet, they will stop that fight pretty quickly. And that's what I'd say as an amateur boxer, it's great because it gives us a chance to learn. You know, we're not just, as long as you have a good coach, which for the most part we do, because all the USA Boxing coaches have to go through the training under USA Boxing, and you have to get the registration and the licensing in order to hold your gym. So without those things, without getting the necessary training, a lot of coaches aren't able to open up gyms, so you won't have a lot of riffraff through the streets.
Lots of licensing and training there. Marcus Robert Johnson is staying with us, competes in the middleweight class. Andrea Nelson, former professional boxer, now a coach. Have you gone to Wisconsin Golden Gloves? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about amateur boxing here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Since the first Golden Gloves tournament, almost a century ago, the Golden Gloves of America and its franchises have provided this opportunity for young athletes to develop boxing skills. The Golden Gloves program produces most of the competitors for USA boxing teams for the Olympics, and there's the Golden Gloves tournament set for this weekend in Middleton. Are you an amateur boxing fan? Have you ever traded punches with an opponent in the ring? Do you work out on a punching bag? Tell us about your training at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Coach Andrea Nelson is president of the Bob Lynch Boxing Foundation in Madison. Marcus Robert Johnson will fight as a middleweight in this weekend's tournament, and they stay with us. So, Andrea, what is it like to be a female boxer? You were, you're now a boxing coach, but you were in the ring yourself. What is it like for amateur women boxers?
So initially it was really hard to get matches. So I was always sparring with men. There are no male-female competitions. But I think that actually made me stronger. And since the Olympics 2012, when women were allowed, amateur boxing was allowing women to compete.
A new sport.
Yeah, I think it's become much more popular with females. It's difficult. Anything you're doing that's typically a male sport or a male activity, that trying to break into it, it can be hard.
I can imagine, too, there aren't many female coaches.
I think, yeah, you're right.
What is it like to coach the men?
I think sometimes when they first come in, maybe they look at me. I'm not a real tall woman either. They kind of question whether I know what I'm doing, but usually pretty quickly people see that I do, and they just treat me like a coach.
Marcus, how important is coaching and learning as in tandem with the training? What do you get out of a coach?
Man, the coach is honestly everything. It's your guide. It's the person that's going to keep you safe when maybe you don't know what's going on, especially in training, because in training, I'd say, is when the most risk can happen, because at any given day, anyone could come in there and they could come from another gym. They might just come off the street and not know what they're doing, which in some cases could be worse. And the coach is really, really powerful in making sure things go the right way, making sure that rules are followed. And also it's your friendship and that sense of motivation, because a lot of times I might not have known what to eat, or a lot of times I might have just been having a rough day, and the coach is always there. You get this bond, this relationship. You know, Andrea is more than my coach now. Like, she started off as my coach, but now she's just family to me, and it's amazing.
I love to hear that. Andrea, let's look at the rise of Brianna Shea of Madison, who is an alternate for the Tokyo Olympics. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
What do you see in her?
She's right away, when I first saw her, it was clear she was an athlete. She's got the physique. She's got the long reach. She's tall. And she's really driven. She's a real pleasure to train, because she just pushes herself and you don't have to be on her heels making her work. I have to actually hold her back a lot.
Oh, wow.
But she's a... I think she's going to go pretty far.
We're talking with Andrea Nelson, former professional boxer, now coaches. Marcus Robert Johnson, an amateur boxer, competing in this weekend's statewide championships, the Golden Gloves. What do you want to know about amateur boxers? Have you considered boxing as a workout or to improve your athleticism? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Josh now in Oak Creek. Hi, Josh.
Hi. I've got a question for you. I am one that would love to do the boxing for the aerobic work on everything, but I also have been interested in quite a while. I did go to ABC Boxing, I think it was, in Milwaukee, and I noticed one thing when I tried to find a gym, is that it is definitely more kid-orientated. I could see that, and being that I'm 40, I noticed it was pretty much all volunteer. I'm wondering if there's a gym that is more on the adult side, or is that where I'm supposed to be, so that, you know, am I supposed to be working with the kids, but just doesn't make sense?
I'll take this, Marcus. So
okay.
uh, for, Ford's gym in Madison. I'm not just trying to plug our gym, although I am. But we actually have probably the largest percentage of master boxers in the state. And again, master means 41 and up. Our gym is set up more for adults, so I don't know if you can make it to Madison, but that'd be a good place to go.
Well, Josh, you could be a master boxer. I think Josh will just, I would assume, Andrea, you just have to kind of start poking around, looking around in the Milwaukee area to find a gym that might work for him.
Yeah, there are a lot of gyms in Milwaukee.
Marcus?
I'd also say, too, if you're just doing it for the aerobic, like you don't plan on taking any competition matches, like our gym's kind of a hybrid where we have competitors and we also have people that are just training for themselves. But there's a lot of gyms around, depending where you live, like Milwaukee, other parts of the state. There's places called like Ninth Round and stuff that are not aimed towards competitive boxing. They're just kind of an aerobic. You're just going to kind of go in there and punch. It's kind of like Taibo. So for me, I don't personally like it because I'm trying to spar and compete. But I think gyms like that are really good for people that are just trying to dip their toes in the water and see what it's about.
Marcus, go ahead, Andrea.
I just wanted to add that it is helpful, though, to get some good training and technique before you go in and just start banging on the heavy bag. That's the way people get injured. Even if all you're doing is trying to get a workout, I think people tend to get frustrated fairly soon with shoulder and hand injuries if they don't learn technique.
Marcus, what is your training regimen like each week?
When you're getting ready for a competition, like a national tournament or a state tournament, you're really going to be running every day. You're probably going to be sparring once or twice a week, depending on what you're doing. I'm going to work with my coach as often as possible. Right now, I'm in school for firefighting, so I haven't been training the way that I need to. Like as I have in the past.
Andrea, close your ears.
I know. I'm
training hard, but I'm not able to do the things every single day.
Sure.
You know, like if you're really taking this seriously and you're really trying to get to that next level, it's going to require everyday focus. You know, there's not people that are like brain surgeons and also champion boxers. It really takes everything. So you're going to want to dedicate your time to taking care of your body through eating good nutrition and also working out and working with your coach on your technique.
Yeah. Brianna trains 6 days a week. I have to force her to take a day off.
Yeah. Brianna, yeah, she doesn't have my problem.
Marcus, how do you see boxing show up in your other parts of your life? Like, I understand, like, last year you were attending bar in the Madison area. Now you're in school. How does boxing impact other areas of your life?
The best thing I got from boxing for me personally in life is patience. Just kind of like what she was saying, what my coach was saying, when new boxers come in, it's about the technique. You can't just rush in, otherwise you'll get beat up or you'll get hit with something, right? And through bartending for the last 10 years, I've always had to deal with people that are in situations altered, I should say. You know, there's alcohol involved, and you never know who's having a bad day or what people are trying to escape from home. And boxing taught me how to be patient with these people, not just these people, but like every person, because you can't just assume. And if I just assume that someone's is a certain way or is thinking a certain way, then I could be wrong and I could offend them. And boxing makes it so that I slow down, because everything in the ring happens very fast. So you get used to kind of that speed and having to think a little quicker.
Yeah. Andrea, we need to ask, this match, this tournament is going on this weekend. Are you talking about COVID-19? What concerns do you have?
Yes, we're following that closely. And I think we're advising people, you know your own health risks. If you're sick, stay home. Reminding everybody to wash your hands frequently.
And Andrea, I think we just lost Andrea. Well, Marcus, There we go. Marcus, I want to ask you as well, what are you thinking heading into this competition? Are you trying to make it to nationals? What is your goal here?
My overall goal is to give myself the peace and the test that I love every year. Golden Gloves holds a real dear spot in my heart. And I just love being a part of the competition. So I've won championships in the past. I've traveled with the national team, and this year I'm just looking to get out there and
Well, Marcus, thank you for joining us. I think we're having some phone complications here. Marcus Robert Johnson, an amateur boxer who won the 2016 and 2019 state championship belts. Andrea Nelson was with us, a boxing coach and president of the Wisconsin Golden Gloves, which will hold its annual statewide championship fights this weekend in Middleton. Coming up, it's advice for families on how to prepare kids for the continued news coverage and conversations around COVID-19. We get insights from a social work professor after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Health Organization's Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus called on countries yesterday to work together and act in unison in the face of a pandemic.
Prevention, preparedness, public health, political leadership, and most of all, people. We're in this together to do the right things with calm and protect the citizens of the world.
We're talking about how to address kids' questions and anxiety about COVID-19. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say offering age-appropriate information with reminders on how to stay safe is a good place to start. How are you talking with young people about this viral outbreak? Does your child watch or read the news? What are they asking about? We're at 800-642-1234. Tara Powell is an assistant professor of social work at the University of Illinois, and her research focuses on trauma recovery in children, youth, and families. Tara, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So when parents and caregivers explain COVID-19 and how it's spread, where should they start this conversation with kids?
So one of the areas to start the conversation is to ask your child, what do they know and what questions do they have? It's likely that children have heard a bit about it so far. It's been quite a bit in the news, and probably people are talking about it within schools. So just asking where they're at, what concerns they might have, and then providing them with accurate and clear information, depending on definitely their age range and developmental level.
So really, first of all, checking in, assessing what they know now. It sounds like listening is the first step.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things we always talk about when disasters happen, and I worked a lot with disasters, is, asking the children what they know, because they might have underlying questions that you don't know, or may have thoughts or worries. And that's one of the first things that parents can do, is just really understand what's going on with my child and what do they want to know.
They may want to know what a pandemic is. Now that this is a pandemic, how do we explain that?
Yeah, so I think, the word pandemic, it's a big word, and a lot of children may have not heard it before. And we don't want to instill fear in the children at all, but we want to give them information about, a pandemic is something that happens. And what it means is that people can catch the illness anywhere. It may have started in China, moved to Europe, and now is in the U.S., but that doesn't mean that if somebody catches the virus, it's going to be severe, or somebody's going to get really sick. It just means that we live in a global world, and the virus is spread around to different countries.
You pick up on something that I would like to touch on, because I heard it in my kids, that they're really curious that this stems from China, that we should perhaps look at China in a different way. And I said, no, that's not it at all. Are there some misconceptions that kids may have when they look about people of other cultures or from China?
Yeah, so one of the things that we need to do to help our children understand a virus or a pandemic is helping them know that just because it starts in one place, so say this one started in China, that doesn't mean that it's because of the Chinese culture in any way, shape, or form. It could have started anywhere. And we want to make sure that they don't have those misconceptions, even if they may hear it from other kids at schools or, you know, other people in the media. So we just want to make sure that they have accurate information so they know a virus doesn't discriminate. It can hit anybody at any time in any place.
Another conversation we're having a lot is good hygiene and washing hands. What can we say there around how kids take care of their bodies?
Yeah, so this is actually a really good time to reinforce hygiene. One of the wonderful things you can do is give them a sense of agency and a sense of control over how healthy they are and protecting themselves. So just reinforcing washing their hands for 20 seconds. And there's been a lot of ideas and thoughts about how to get them to be able to wash their hands for 20 seconds, because that can seem like a long time. So in the news, they've been talking about singing the birthday song twice, because we know that's 20 seconds. But also one fun thing that you could do with your child is have them think about a song that they really like and practice having them sing it for 20 seconds while they wash their hands, so that they really wash their hands long enough and know that they're keeping themselves clean and safe.
And they have a built-in audience. They can look right back at themselves in the mirror when they sing.
Exactly. They can practice their beautiful singing voice.
Tara Powell is an assistant professor of social work at the University of Illinois. Her research focuses on trauma recovery in children and youth and families. We're looking at how to talk about COVID-19 with children. How much do you think we should be telling kids about COVID-19? Is your child asking you about why people are wearing masks? How are you doing? How are you coping with your own stress and anxiety as a parent? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tara, how about explaining what could happen and why around school closures, around sporting events being canceled, or why parents are working from home? How do we approach that, the schedule changes?
Yes, I know this can be complicated for parents, particularly if they're working and there might be a school closure. But in terms of communicating it to children, I know this is evolving every day as the virus spreads, and letting children know that the reason schools might close is not that there is a threat to their safety, but it's because the schools are taking precautions to keep them safe. And the reason that they're closing is so that, you know, the virus doesn't spread more. So it's to take measures to prevent the potential spreading of the virus. And so it's all about safety. And I think that's one of the key things that we need to message to children.
Kids might feel pretty helpless in this. They're not the scientists. They're not the people there who are the talking heads on TV that they're seeing on their screens in the background at home. How can you help them not feel so alone and helpless?
Yeah, so one thing is providing them with information. We do want to provide them with information. If they have questions, answer them. But you also don't want to have the TV on all the time. You don't want to have the news on all the time, because that can also aid in a bit of helplessness. If they're hearing, different stories over and over and over and over again, it actually can elicit more anxiety. So providing them clear and accurate information, you don't have to over provide them with too much information, and letting them know that there are things that they can do to keep themselves safe from the virus. But also one thing that we really have to consider is our anxieties as parents. So making sure that we keep our worries in check, thinking about what we say in front of the children, because what we say, if we're anxious and talking about our anxieties, they'll hear that, and that can actually affect them.
And kids pick up on all our anxieties. They can perceive so much of what we think that we're keeping from them. So how should we as parents be checking in with ourselves as to our own anxiety level?
Yeah, so I think that that's always an important thing to do as an adult and as a parent. So do a check with yourself. Think, you know, how much have you been watching the news? Have you been listening to it constantly? And maybe turn it off for a minute if you are starting to feel really anxious. You still want to keep yourself informed, but having the media play over and over again in the background can actually heighten your own anxiety. If you realize you're feeling anxious, do some coping skills to, you know, to help reduce that anxiety. You know, take some deep breaths. Do a check-in with yourself to figure out where am I at and how can I keep myself calm so that I can also protect my child.
Are there particular facts we can share with our children about what we do know? Because there is so much that we don't know about COVID-19 and how it is spreading. Are there particular things that we can really focus on the things that we are absolutely assured of, that we do know?
Yeah, so there are a few things we do know, and, you know, I'm definitely, you know, not a researcher researching COVID-19, but from what we do know is we do know there are symptoms. It's, well, different than the flu. Some of the symptoms are similar to the flu. We also know that most of the people who catch it will not get seriously ill, but it's just those who may have compromised immune systems. So most people who will get it will recover just fine. And while it is spreading, and it's spread into a number of different places within the U.S., people are working to contain it. And so with all these measures, with school closures, with canceling sporting events, the reason they're doing that is to contain it and make sure that it doesn't spread more. And so those are just a few things that we can say to children to let them know, yeah, you know, it's okay to be worried, but there are different things about the virus that we know, and people are still learning. And so we will still be getting more information as we learn more.
We're talking about how to talk with kids about the COVID-19 pandemic. Tara Powell is an assistant professor of social work at University of Illinois. So kids, you're listening. We want to hear from you. What are your questions about COVID-19? How are you talking about it with your friends? What do you talk about? And what are your teachers saying in class? How are you absorbing all of this? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email us, emailideas@wpr.org. Back in a moment with Tara Powell here on the Ideas Network. Morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Children, they have questions and concerns as the number of COVID-19 cases continues to rise in the U.S. and around the world. There have now been 6 confirmed cases here in Wisconsin. It's dominating news coverage. Public events are being canceled. Some schools are closing for cleaning or out of precaution. What do we tell the kids about this respiratory illness? How do you answer questions in a reassuring way? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Tara Powell is an assistant professor of social work at the University of Illinois, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Let's bring in Christy, who's joining us from Holman. Hi, Christy.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
So my twin daughters just turned 12, and we are scheduled to take a trip to Florida on Tuesday. And, of course, I'm considering canceling. And, A, I guess I'm wondering if we should cancel, and, B, just how to tell them. They're going to be very upset.
Oh, right. What a difficult situation. Tara, do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, so I know that can be really upsetting to cancel a trip that you have been looking forward to. One of the important things is, you know, we know the virus is ever evolving, and so you have to use your best judgment on how you can keep them safe. And you know, what's going on with the virus in terms of its spreading. And you know, if you do have to cancel, you know, telling them that there are times that you can reschedule, and then also have other activities they can look forward to. I know that might not be the perfect resolution, but you know, you ultimately what you want to do is keep your family safe from having the virus.
The birthday celebration will happen, but in a different way. And we have to figure out how to make that, you know, just underscore that we're still celebrating, you know, your birthdays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Tara, you know, one of the questions that I get from my kids is, Mom, when will this be over? When will this stop? And it kind of stops me in my tracks because obviously we don't know, but I don't have a really good response.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's okay that you don't know, and letting them know that, you know, while we don't know, we know that in certain areas right now it has been contained, and it's because the governments and communities took measures to make sure that the spread was stopping. So while you don't know exactly the timeline, you know that by taking these measures, we can actually contain the virus and reduce the amount of spread, which can shorten the time frame that this is going on.
What are some signs of anxiety in young children who may not be able to express what they're feeling, or what should we be watching for in our kids?
Yeah, so with young children, you know, they might not be able to verbalize what they're going through. So if you're seeing regressive behaviors within your children, say they're potty trained and they're wetting the bed, say they're wanting to sleep with you during the night more often than they usually do, say they're acting out in certain ways, those are all signs that, you know, maybe something's going on with them in terms of anxiety or any kind of change in behavior. For school-age children, they may repetitively ask questions over and over and over and over again. And while you want to answer them, that also could be a sign of anxiety. And also, they can also have some self-blame. So feeling guilty about different things that aren't their faults. And so you just want to be able to monitor. You want to definitely monitor to know where your child is if they are having any behavior change or any of these kinds of symptoms.
What about children who do have pre-existing anxiety disorder or other mental health issues? Could this situation we're in right now be compounding those mental health problems?
Yeah, they definitely can. And that's something that, you know, if your child has gotten care before, or even if they haven't gotten care, but you know that they may have a higher level of anxiety, you know, making sure that you keep in contact with the social worker they may have seen, the psychologist they may have seen, and also learning yourself as parents, doing research into what are some things I can do at home to reduce anxiety and build coping skills in my child. But definitely reach out if you notice your child is having anxiety and they've had pre-existing mental health difficulties. Definitely reach out to a psychologist or the social worker that they've seen before.
We're talking with Tara Powell, an assistant professor of social work at the University of Illinois. We're exploring what to do about young people's fears in the wake of the COVID-19 outbreak. Have you inquired about your child's knowledge so far about the virus? What have you asked them about? How do you approach these conversations? Did they know more than you thought? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Steve now in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a 12-and-a-half-year-old girl and then a 15-and-a-half-year-old girl. And what I've always tried to instill in them in our society is how our society has shifted so much to an overreaction society over everything. and that you need to critically think and see, you know, what is really something to really be concerned with. And I was so proud of my 15-and-a-half-year-old. We went out to dinner last night, and she said, you know, we should go on a trip. Everyone's afraid to travel. Flights are so cheap right now. And I was so proud of her because she's not overreacting to this event.
Steve, thanks for the call. Tara, you know, how do we keep our expectations in check about what people are concerned about?
Yeah, so I think that that's a great example of, you know, there is a lot of high reactions to this. And, you know, what we have to do is we have to just make our children be able to look at the media and be able to get accurate information rather than misinformation and know what's safe and what's not safe. So if we're told through the CDC, for example, it's okay to travel, then we adhere to, you know, what the recommendations are. And so having children, say 15-year-olds or older adolescents, critically look at the information that's given and appraise it in a thoughtful way.
Well, let's look at our adolescents who may be coming home from college, and they may be staying home from college, not being able to go back after spring break. How can we address anxiety in our young adults?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one thing that you do is very similar with what you would do with adolescents, helping them identify accurate information through the media. Also, they may feel a little bit antsy if they've been in college and now they're home and they're doing online classes, but do activities with them. Do fun activities. You don't see them as much as parents, and you know, also helping them have healthy coping skills. Doing fun things as a family are all things you can do with your college student. And then talking with them. If they want to talk about you know, any fears that they have, then that's okay, because they're young adults at this point and are able to have those deeper conversations.
Some of those fears, too, may be related to the stress of money, because they may have a job at college that they can't go to if they're having to stay away from campus.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, knowing that that might be an issue with them, and doing what you can to support them. So, you know, if they're away from campus, if they don't have money, knowing that, you know, this is not going to last forever, and it's not because they don't want to work and don't want to earn the money, but it's because they're not able to for a little bit.
Tara, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Tara Powell is an assistant professor of social work at the University of Illinois, where her research focuses on trauma recovery in children, youth, and families. By the way, WPR has a page devoted to coronavirus where you can find it at WPR.org/coronavirus. That's WPR.org/coronavirus. Just ahead, a chemist explains the environmental and health implications of microplastics. We go in the lab. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.